Hi, this is Stuart Harris, and let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all, do you like to watch videos on YouTube? Most people do these days, and if you do, perhaps you came across a music video for something called the Harlem Shake. Well, so did some people from Tennessee High School in Bristol, Tennessee, right near WETS, and they decided they were going to make their own Harlem Shake video, and so they got permission, they went down to the school, they made the video, they put it up, everybody seemed to like it, right up until the school administration told them to take it down. We'll talk about that in just a few minutes. Well, also, well, let me ask you another question. How do you feel about traffic cameras, sometimes called red light cameras? Yeah, I thought so. We're also going to speak to a lawyer by the name of Mike Allen, who has fought those cameras in court and recently had them taken down. Stay tuned.
Your weekly Constitutional is produced at WETS-FM in cooperation with the home of the Constitution, James Madison's Montpelier. Your host is Stuart Harris, who teaches constitutional law at the Appalachian School of Law in Grundy, Virginia.
I must admit that as of the spring of 2013, I had never heard of something called the Harlem Shake. Now, lest you think I'm just an old fogey, like my son Ben always tells me I am, I will say that I am familiar with the idea of dance crazes. Those have been around for quite a long time. And so it didn't come as a great surprise to me that there was a particular dance song that was out there, or that I'd even heard of something called YouTube, where a video was available. And I wasn't really completely surprised when I heard that local high school students all across the country, actually, had done their own spoof Harlem Shake videos. None of this was that striking or surprising to me. What did surprise me was when I was reading one of our local newspapers here in Northeast Tennessee, and I saw the name of one of my former law students from the Appalachian School of Law. Her name is Sonia Helm, and I saw Sonia Helm in a front page article, talking to the school board in Bristol, Tennessee, and arguing in favor of the free speech rights of not only her son, Peyton, but several other students at Tennessee High School. Free speech rights, I thought. Harlem Shake, what's up with this? Well, it turns out that after the Vikings, Go Vikings of Tennessee High, made their Harlem Shake video, it was very popular. Everyone seemed to like it, right until the school administration asked them to take it down. Uh-oh. First Amendment red flags go up. Well, Sonia was already on the case, so of course I gave her a call and I asked her what was going on, and she told me a tale that I immediately knew I would have to share with you. So without further ado, Sonia Helm, her son Peyton, and a couple of other ruffians named Austin and TJ. Whose idea was this? What's your name, and was it your idea? Are you the mastermind behind this sordid plot?
My name's Austin Taylor, and it was actually both mine and T.J. Flanagan here beside me. It was our idea. We came together, actually.
So what was the idea? That you just wanted to do something funny, or was there something more significant about it?
Well, obviously, you know, it was a national dance craze, and other schools in the region had started to do one, like Virginia High, for instance. And so,
when they did it,
Central did it, and you know, East did it. We had to do one.
Right.
We had to do it better, bigger and better.
Right.
Just like the Vikings always do.
Ah, I see. Okay, got to get that little dig in there.
Right.
Okay, good,
right.
Good.
So he messaged me and he wanted to do one, and I wanted to do one. And we said, why don't we just come together and do one big one? And we planned the Saturday. We made the event on Facebook, and we got students to join the event, and we all just came out one Saturday and filmed it.
That was all the pre-planning you did, was just set up a Facebook page?
Pretty much, yeah.
Did everybody bring his or her own costume?
Yeah, everyone dressed up in their own costume and brought their own props, so...
Those costumes were remarkable.
Yeah.
Some of them were remarkably elaborate. Some of them were remarkably skimpy. Who was the person in the Speedo in the first scene?
His name's Evan Luther, actually. He's on the swim team at Tennessee High.
So. Right. So that was an official Tennessee High Speedo.
Right.
And what was the mask he was wearing? Was that a Darth Vader mask?
It was actually a motorcycle helmet.
A motorcycle helmet.
Yeah.
It was a rather interesting combination. Okay. So everybody brought his own stuff, and you guys just all showed up at the appointed time.
Right.
And someone said, okay, let's do it over here. Or did you have more of a plan than that?
I wanted to film in front of the school so you would see the Tennessee High in the background.
Right.
And then the classroom scenes we actually filmed after school in the different classrooms with the teachers involved.
So. Mm-hmm. And you got permission from everybody to do this?
We got permission from the teachers, and we actually got permission from a lot of the assistant principals to do this.
Okay. So this was, if it wasn't an official school project, but it was all done above board, and everything was cool. And then it sounds like it came together fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. So what happened after you did your filming? That was basically done over one day or one weekend?
Right. We filmed that Saturday, and then the ones that were in the classroom, we filmed after school that following week. And after we finished those, we went back to home, and we just put all the footage together and edited all the clips together. And pretty much it was about 2 weeks after we had filmed the very first one that we put it up on YouTube.
Okay, well, let's not get ahead of ourselves, though, because there's some good stuff coming on. Peyton, do you have anything to add? Anything that were you involved in this process? Come on, move over by the microphone. Were you involved up to this point in the process? I guess you were, so what was your involvement?
Well, it wasn't really much of my idea. It was more these two, but they asked me to be in it, and I said sure, and I used a banana costume from TJ, and he...
You were the banana?
Yeah.
Okay.
That skateboarded in. And
very, very effective.
That's really all my involvement so far. Uh-huh. I've been with them through the whole thing, but I didn't really organize it. That's what they did.
I see. So you were just mostly the one guy in the whole group that could skateboard dressed as a banana.
Sure.
Okay, sounds to me like a crucial contribution. Okay, TJ, what about you?
I don't know what much else I could add other than me and Austin just came together, decided to make one just for the heck of it, and... It turned into something a lot bigger than what we expected it to be.
Well, let's finish the technical end of it. So you had all this raw footage, and someone had to put it all together, and then you produced it. You were just about to tell me, Austin. So then production took a couple of weeks, and very high production quality, I must say. And then you stuck it up on YouTube. What happened next?
Well, basically, Austin, he was involved with a couple of the assistant principals, and they got to talking, and they advised us to take it down.
They advised you to take it down. Okay.
And
how did you react when they advised you to take it down?
Well, at first we decided to leave it up for a couple of days, but then they got a little more strict and we decided to take it down after, I think it
now,
was
how did this happen?
Days.
I mean, this is on YouTube. This does not exist at the school. So what, you were at school and one of the assistant principals said, hey, TJ, hey, Austin, hey, Peyton, you need to take this down.
Yeah, they called me and Austin to the office, and we sat down and talked about it for a few minutes.
And how did you react when they said that they wanted you to take down something from YouTube?
Well, first we were kind of surprised because we thought we did everything right. We got permission. It seemed perfect, and then they just wanted us to take it down. We couldn't believe it.
What reasons did they give?
They said there were safety violations and dress code issues.
Also... Your dress code does not allow you to dress as a banana while you're in school. Is that it?
That is it.
Apparently so. Okay. I see. What were the safety issues?
They did not like how some students were dancing on the desks and just on tables and everything, like inside of the school.
I see. Okay. Anything you want to add to that, Peyton? No? Austin, were you also at this meeting?
Well, like we had said before, we put the video on YouTube that Sunday night after we had finished all the editing and whatnot. And that following Monday, I had gotten called to the office, and one of the assistant principals had told me that when I walked into the room, he had the principal of Tennessee High on the phone, and she had told me, she asked me to take it down. She said, I would kindly appreciate it if you would remove the video from YouTube. And I said, well, what's your reasoning? And she said, well, we don't like the fact that it was filmed during school hours. Okay, right there. It wasn't filmed during school hours. We filmed it after school.
Mm-hmm.
Two, they said that the guy in the Speedo didn't meet dress code, and that was his school uniform.
Right. Well, that was a Tennessee High.
It was the Tennessee
swim.
High school.
So that's exactly. I mean, I mentioned the Speedo because that was the very first scene that you see, and right. Him with the Speedo and the motorcycle helmet on is an interesting contrast. But that's an official, I mean, that's exactly what he would have worn or has worn at Tennessee High swim meets.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And so I asked her, I said, is this coming from you or is this coming from above you? And she said, this is coming from me because I don't want to get in trouble. And I said, well, how about we ask the school board and the school superintendent if he wants it down? And she said, okay. So they told me to leave it up that night, not to worry about it, and they were going to ask him. Well, they call me back in the office Tuesday, and they say that the school board and the superintendent did not approve of the video, and they want it down now. And so they said that they would appreciate it once again if I would remove the video. And so I never said I would. I just said okay. So I went home that night, and we didn't remove.
You said okay. I understand you would appreciate it.
Right.
Okay.
So I never agreed to it. So I'll go home that night. We didn't take it down. I come back Wednesday, and one of the assistant principals pulls me out of class, and he says, "What's the deal? Are you going to take it down or not?" And at that point, I started to feel a little intimidated, like they were pretty much going to keep asking us and keep pulling us in the office until we did. And so I told him that this is when I brought TJ into it and said that it was we had created the account, the YouTube account, mutually. And so they brought TJ into the office, and that's when when I walked back into the office, I heard the assistant principal saying to TJ, "So you're telling me that if I go back on YouTube tonight by 4 o'clock, you're going to have this down?" And TJ says yes, obviously because he's being intimidated at that point and pushed to take it down. And so we took it down that Wednesday, and it was amazing. Like by the end of the week, we had so many people that were just in uproar about us having to remove it. The whole community was...
Well, how many hits had you gotten on it to that point by the time you took it down?
When we took it down, it was around, what was it like?
Around 10,000.
Yeah, around 10,000.
Around 10,000 hits.
In 3 days.
In 3 days. And then all of a sudden it's down.
Right.
Did you make some sort of announcement as to why it was down, or did people just notice that it wasn't up anymore?
They just noticed that it wasn't up, and everyone kept asking, and then we would tell them, you know, the school asked us to because it didn't meet dress code and the different reasons that they gave us. So...
Okay. TJ, you want to add anything to that? Because, or is that pretty much a fair statement of what happened? Okay, TJ, Austin was saying he overheard a conversation between you and one of the assistant principals. Is that pretty much how it happened?
Yeah, he called me in first, and he started talking to me, and we discussed if there was a way to get it down and if it could go down that night. And we started talking, and then he called Austin, and once I said, we made the account together. And then he just asked us to take it down. Then he said, "So if I look tonight, it'll be down." And that's okay. When we took it down.
How did you feel about all of this?
I mean, we worked hard on it for a good 2 weeks, and then they're just going to take it down after 3 days. I didn't like it, really. I just didn't like it.
Did you feel like you were under any pressure to do
so? Oh, yes.
Oh, you did?
Definitely.
Okay, because initially, if I recall, when Austin was talking, it was at least phrased as a very polite request from your principal.
That's how it was at first, and then... But when you're sitting in front of one of your assistant principals and they're telling you, "So if I look tonight, it's going to be down," you feel a little intimidated.
I see. Okay. Well, then, Peyton, you haven't chimed in here. Were you involved in any of this controversy at this point? So, Peyton, we've gotten to the point now where Austin and TJ have told me that they felt a bit pressured to take this down. But up till now, you've been a banana on a skateboard. Did you get involved at this point as well in the controversy?
Well, they never asked me personally, but I did. I was talking to TJ a few times during class, and I told him that. Well, I told him first of all not to take it down because the school board has no right to pressure them to take it down. I mean, they can ask all they want, but they have no right to pressure them like they did. And I told him that if he takes it down, I'm going to try to do something to put it back up. And that's when I went to my mom, and I told her. Everything was going on, and she made a Facebook page about the whole thing. And
I should just mention at this point that your mom is an attorney.
Yeah.
And indeed is one of my former students from the Appalachian School of Law. And so for the benefit of the listeners, I will say that I know exactly why you went to your mom. And I know, and it doesn't surprise me one bit, her reaction to this, but please continue on. She made a Facebook page.
Well, she made a Facebook page, and it had enormous success, and I did other things. You know, I went around and I told people to do everything they could to try to campaign against the whole asking to take it down, the pressure, and I bought car paint, and I painted it on my car, and I handed it out to people.
What did you paint on your car?
Save the THS Harlem Shake. And I gave some to Austin, he did it, and... we put it on TJ's mom's car, and I put it on my mom's car and handed that to different people and such.
It's your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and we're talking about, once again, free speech rights and students, involving several students right here in Northeast Tennessee, one of their moms, and the Harlem Shake. Stick around. Well, once again, it's time for our constitutional quiz, and I was expecting the quiz guy, but today he's all dressed in his fancy green skin-tight leotard. It's all green with a green mask. Could it be
the Riddler?
I see. Well, what kind of riddle do you have for us today, Doug?
Hey, today we've got a great riddle.
A great riddle.
Here we go. I'm an island to myself with a strong statehood streak. I skipped the debate and had no representing signature. I was so late to ratify, the president was already picked. Who am I?
I guess Hawaii would be too easy and obvious an answer, but I don't know.
Well, I'm going to give you four choices.
And did I just blow one of those choices?
Choice A is Hawaii.
Well, maybe that's the right one.
Hint to listeners, it's not Hawaii.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. I blew it for you. What are the other ones?
B, Manhattan.
Manhattan. Well, that's an island.
C, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
It's even got island in the name.
Yes.
Or D, Ellis Island.
Ellis, oh, that's a very important island as well. Let's see what our contestant has to say. Well, contestant, could you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Tim Lindstrom.
Tim Lindstrom. And where are you from, Tim?
I hail from Johnson City, Tennessee.
You're sounding awfully familiar to me. Why is that? Have we met somewhere before?
This might be my second time on the program here, trying to seek out a bit of redemption for my previous appearance.
Now I remember you were just on the show a few weeks back, and you took a quiz, and it just didn't work out. What was that question you asked before, or you were asked?
I believe it was whether the President of the United States could be an ordained priest or minister.
That's right, and you got tripped up, if I may say so, because the idea was that you thought maybe that was too much religion and state mixing together, right?
That is accurate, absolutely.
Right, and that was actually, it was a hard question, because it does sound strange to have the idea of a priest or a minister as president, or a rabbi, perhaps, but... when we really thought it through, we realized that they are citizens just like anyone else, and they have free exercise rights. And by golly, if they want to run for president and we want to elect them, it's perfectly okay. But you felt bad about not winning.
Absolutely. Felt the need for redemption. So
now, is this a matter of pride, or is there some girl out there you really want to impress with your T-shirt?
Well, I am very happily married and have been for a number of years, so this is all about the pride.
It's all about the... Well, you can still want to impress your wife.
You make a very good point. We may need to edit that last part out. I hope she's not listening.
All righty, then. If I recall correctly, there were four answer choices. They were A, Hawaii, B, Manhattan, C, Rhode Island, and D, Ellis Island, even though I screwed up and kind of helped you out by eliminating answer choice A. Do you have any idea among the other ones?
Well, I'm going to have to keep my fingers crossed here and go with Rhode Island.
Now, why would you pick, that's answer choice C, why wouldn't you pick B, Manhattan, or D, Ellis Island?
Well, I believe that the question was about ratification, and if I am correct, Rhode Island is the only answer there that is actually a state.
Wait a minute, Manhattan's not a state?
To my knowledge, no. I believe Manhattan is part of the great city of New York.
I think they think of themselves as being their own nation, let alone state, but I think... Perhaps in a strictly legal sense, you may be right. So because Rhode Island is the only answer choice remaining after I blew Hawaii, the only one remaining after that is actually a state, and therefore the only one that could have ratified, you think that's the answer. You're going to stick with that as your final answer?
I am going to do that. Rhode Island is it.
So, Doug, what is the answer?
Well, you know, it's got to be an island. Mm-hmm. And we know that it's got to be a state. You know, I'm an island to myself with a strong statehood streak.
Well, that's why I was thinking Hawaii. Yeah. Okay, all right.
So, you know, Manhattan isn't going to make it. Ellis Island isn't going to make it. It's Rhode Island, of course.
Rhode Island.
You know, they skipped the debate. They never actually sent anyone to the Constitutional Convention.
Well, actually, I did know that because I happen to recall that they used to call Rhode Island Rogue Island.
Nice, nice, nice.
And indeed, because they didn't ratify, I think it was what, until like 1792 or something like
that?
They
didn't ratify the U.S. Constitution until after Washington was president.
Right, exactly. And the funny thing about all of that is that when we had the bicentennial of the Constitution, either the mayor of Philadelphia or maybe it was the governor of Pennsylvania invited all of the other ratifying governors from the original 13 states to come to Philadelphia and talk about that. Rhode Island refused. And they said, we're not coming now. We'll come in a few years on the 200th anniversary of when we ratified. So they are still rogues.
You know, it's amazing. I'm expecting to see a bumper sticker that says, Rhode Island, the oh shucks, I guess we'll join you state.
Well, Tim, congratulations. You won this time.
I could not be happier.
Tremendous. No doubt you and your wife, who will now be very impressed with her learned and erudite husband.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again, Doug. That was a very good riddle.
Hey, it's the Constitution. I read it for the articles.
It's your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today we're talking with several high school students from Tennessee High in Bristol, Tennessee, about the free speech controversy surrounding their production of a video based on the Harlem Shake. Before the break, we were talking to young Peyton Helm all about what happened when the school decided it didn't like the video and wanted it taken down. And, of course, also, that's about the time his mother, Sonia Helm, one of my former students and now an attorney, decided to get involved.
What happened next?
We had a meeting with the school board.
With the school board? Was it you went to a school board meeting, or was there a special meeting between you and the school board?
We went to a school board meeting, and my mom got up and talked about the whole thing and asked to be on the schedule for next month. And then they scheduled a private meeting with Dr. Lilly and the principal and the assistant principal and me, TJ, and Austin, and our moms.
I see. Well, now I'm going to ask your mom to take the hot seat. I want to see what she has to say about this since we've been talking about your mom here. So, Mom, I know your name, but just for the benefit of everyone here, could you introduce yourself?
I am Sonia Slaughter-Helm. I'm an attorney in Bristol, Tennessee.
Okay. Now, we've already mentioned twice now that you are a lawyer, but at this stage, were you acting as a lawyer or as a mom?
Really, I was acting as a mom.
Right.
Peyton came to me the weekend of the race in Bristol and asked me about the video, if I remembered it, and of course I said yes, and he said, well, they're going to make them take it down. And so I stopped what I was doing and I said, wait, who's going to make who take it down and where is it? And he said, it's on YouTube. And I said, who's going to make them take it down? And he said, well, Austin's been called to the office nearly every day this week, and they're telling him to take it down. I said, okay, who? And he said, the principal and the school board. And I said, well, I think I want to talk to Austin because I don't think they can do that. But I wanted to find out exactly what had happened. So I called Austin, but he was at the race. So I called his mom, and she verified the information and told me that she had been to see Dr. Lilly. And she asked him, you know, what was going to happen if they didn't take it down. And he said the school board lawyer would get involved and make them take it down.
Ah.
So I did create the Facebook page. The Facebook page was Save the THS Harlem Shake Video. Of course, I had no idea it was going to have the response that it did. And we ended up having over 112,000 unique viewers from over 22 different countries. And
did you get many fans? I guess you like people who like the page?
Just under 4,000.
4,000.
Right. We had more likes on our page in a short amount of time than the Bristol City Schools Facebook page has ever had. So that's kind of how it started. And then I found out that was on a Sunday that I created the page, and it was on the same Sunday that Peyton told me about the controversy. And on Monday, the very next day, there was a school board meeting. So
a regular school board meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we didn't have much time to pull anything together because it was the very next evening. So I posted on the page that I was going to invite parents who were concerned about this to my office at 4:30 on Monday to have a short meeting before we would go to the school board. And parents did come, but also so did the media. And while it was not a formal press conference, I don't even really know how the media was notified, but we had several media outlets come, and they did interviews, and the story sort of got launched at that point.
Those media folks, they get really uptight whenever someone starts talking about restricting speech. Yeah, they're very into that free speech thing. Okay,
well, there's a good reason for that.
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. So then what happened?
So we went to the school board, and I addressed the board, but I didn't address the board as to the ultimate issue. It was primarily just to be placed on the agenda for the upcoming month, because at that point I didn't know if they even knew about it for certain, if they had seen it, if they had not seen it, or what their position was. So we just simply asked to be placed on the agenda the following month, which would have been April, the third, I believe it's the third Monday in April. And we left. And then the following week, I received a call from Dr. Gary Lilly, who is our director of schools for the Bristol, Tennessee City Schools. And he asked to have a meeting with myself, the boys, the other parents, and the principal. And I said, you know, I agreed. But I wanted to make sure that one of the assistant principals was there as well, because he was involved in calling the boys to the office. And he was there as well. And at that meeting, they went through the video frame by frame, in a sense, and told us what their objections were. And the objections were various. One was dress code, as Austin mentioned. The other was safety issues that TJ mentioned, both dancing on desk and also filming in the weight room. They did not feel that any filming in the weight room was safe. And they didn't like the violations of the dress code, as far as the student who wore the school Speedo. And I believe they had an objection to a lady, a student, who was in a swimsuit.
I looked at it very carefully after I was aware of this controversy, and I think there might have been a couple of girls in bikinis sort of in the background. And then, of course, the fellow in the Speedo was up front. But other than that, I didn't see anybody showing any skin. And, of course, these were swimsuits. I mean, obviously, right, they're skin showing. It was mostly people dressed as bunnies or as clowns or whatever else.
Right. One of the students had on a swimsuit. She was wearing a life jacket with it as well.
Okay, that's right. And then there was I don't recall. I'm speaking from memory here. But I guess what I'm saying is, when I looked at this, I saw a bunch of students dressed in silly clothing or in a variety of things. I didn't see anything that I thought was particularly objectionable. But apparently they found the swimsuits objectionable, among other things.
Among other things.
Okay, but I'm trying to understand here. It's obviously as a spoof video. And it's obviously not something that's really taking place. So I'm trying to understand why they would be concerned about a dress code. I mean, this is almost like a school play, right? I mean, in a school play, you have people dressed up in costumes. For people doing skits in an assembly, they're dressed up in costumes. And I don't understand exactly why they were concerned about people being in dress code when they were in a video.
It is similar, but it's not exactly similar, because this was not a school play, and it was not a school video, and it was not a school production.
Well, yeah, I know that, and I wasn't trying to say it was. I'm simply saying that students who are at school are not always in dress code, because they're not always during the school day. I mean, they do other things. I mean, if they're playing a football game, they're in a football uniform, whatever. So, I just don't truly understand that objection. And the safety objections, again, I'm trying to understand as well. I mean, no one had been injured at this point.
No one was ever injured.
No one was injured. So if a person had been previously on a desk, were they afraid that this was going to set some sort of bad example and encourage children to get on the desk during the school day? Or again, I'm trying to understand.
I think you would probably have to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they told us.
Okay.
You know, safety and dress code.
Okay. Well, I will try to ask them. I'll see if they'll come and talk to me about it, but that'll be up to them. Please go on. What happened next?
Well, at the meeting, they went through the video and showed us what their objections were. And what they had proposed at that point in the meeting was that we do a new video and it be school sanctioned. Mm-hmm. And that it be used to raise money. There is currently a renovation project for the Bristol, Tennessee High School Stone Castle, which is
right.
That football
yes,
stadium.
Yes, that wonderful football stadium, right?
Yeah. Well, it's in disrepair, mm-hmm. and so there's a fundraising effort going on currently to do renovations to that facility. So they wanted the boys to do a video to raise money for that. However, at that point in the meeting, that was the only offer on the table, and I pointed out to them that the kids don't need their blessing to do another video. They had already been approached at this point by a production company that had offered to do a production for them, let them direct it, let them film it, and they were going to bring in top-notch equipment, lift trucks and everything, and had given them for free a $25,000 budget to do a Harlem Shake video for the community, and they had already gotten the site, the location to film that approved. So I pointed that out to Dr. Lilly respectfully, that that's a nice offer and I'm sure the boys are interested, but to be honest, they don't need that offer from you. They already have that offer. And if you don't deal with the original video, you're going to have problems. And at that point, we had already had 112,000 views and so forth. So Dr. Lilly said that there had been some negative comments, that not everything about the video had been positive. So I asked him, so, well, how many negative comments have you had? Because I've had 112,000. <You know? laughs> And So he just, you know. He said, well, not that many, but at any event, what the ultimate decision was that we would let the original video go back up with a disclaimer. And so the school attorney sent the disclaimer to me, and I sent it to TJ, and I think within about 30 seconds, the disclaimer was on the video, but we did not...
What does the disclaimer say?
That even though it was filmed at the school, that the school did not endorse the video. And so TJ put that...
Well, then that seems to be ultimately what the school was concerned about, if that's what they wanted to disclaim, was this is in no way our official video.
Right.
And it's not... Basically, it's not our fault. If you don't like this video, it's not the school's fault. Is that...
Right. And that was... I thought that was a fair resolution to the issue. Some people didn't. Some people felt like it should have gone back up without the disclaimer. But the boys really were trying to keep wave making to a minimum,
mm-hmm.
and be respectful of authority. And of course, Peyton and TJ still have years to go at the school. Austin's graduating. But ultimately, that's what was done. And so we did not upload the video instantly. We had a press conference at my office on a Saturday to announce the video was going live, and it went live at the press conference.
To Weekly Constitutional, I'm Stuart Harris, and we've been talking to Sonia Helm and her son Peyton and their friends Austin and TJ all about the controversy over the Harlem Shake at Tennessee High School. Stick around. Well, Sean O'Brien, welcome back to your Weekly Constitutional.
It's always good to be with you, Stuart.
Always a pleasure. What is happening this week at Montpelier?
Well, probably like right now at Montpelier mm-hmm. is the walk in the woods that we talked about last week.
Right.
But the good news is another chance for taking a walk in the woods at Montpelier.
So if you're listening to this show, don't despair. You can still go and walk in the woods, and there'll probably still be some nice color there.
There will definitely be some nice color. So on October 27th, we will have our Working Woods Walk, which is attached to our Big Woods. So you walk through some of the Big Woods to get to the Working Woods. And the Working Woods is also referred to as our demonstration forest. And that's a successional management scheme for how you might take care of forests if you had forest on your land. It is also very beautiful. There are some wildflower meadows up there, not much in bloom in late October, but it's still very pretty to look at.
I've been to the demonstration forest, and it is a different experience. As you say, it is beautiful in its own way.
Right.
And when you go to the big woods, you have the canopy. But there are lots of places in the demonstration woods where you haven't got a canopy yet, where you've got the smaller trees, you've got the smaller stuff. But it's very interesting to walk through.
Yeah, and in the spring and in the summer, it's really fun to be there because there's a lot of things in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
So you see a lot of insects, butterflies, and different kinds of bees and things. So it's really fun. In the fall, you won't see so much of that, but you'll see a lot of, I think, really beautiful flowers or dried out wildflowers, mm-hmm. and of course the leaves on the trees.
Very cool. And this is directly adjacent to the big woods, so it's still within a walking distance of the mansion. It's still very much a doable thing.
And that's Sunday, October 27th at 2 p.m.
2 p.m.
Led by master naturalists.
Tremendous. Well, Sean O'Brien, thanks very much.
Absolutely.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and we've been hearing from one side in the Harlem Shake Tennessee High School controversy. We've been hearing from Sonia Helm and her son Peyton and their friends Austin and TJ. And it was our sincere intention to hear from the other side, to let the school board tell us why they did what they did. But unfortunately, they declined our request for an interview and therefore were unable to give the other side. And that's unfortunate. The offer stands open, gentlemen, ladies, if you'd like to come and talk about this controversy, you know where to find us. By the sheerest coincidence, we have another issue that we've been having difficulty getting comment on from both sides. So once again, we're going to have to present a rather one-sided account, but it's a fascinating one. We recently spoke with attorney Mike Allen, lives up in Ohio, and who was approached by some people who were concerned about a traffic camera nearby. And he filed a case, and I'll let Mike tell you about it.
What happened here in Cincinnati is we have a small community, the village of Elmwood Place. They are having budget troubles like many municipalities in the state of Ohio and throughout the country. They instituted a program with a vendor by the name of OptiTraffic, whereby they have speed cameras installed in this little village. The speed cameras will allegedly, according to them, record the speed, and if you exceed the speed limit, will send you what's called a notice of liability, which is actually like a citation, and you then have to pay that notice of liability.
Notice of liability, which is like a citation. I have a sense that that's going to be a very important point at some point during our discussion.
It is, Stuart. There's no doubt about it, because what happens is they are sent in the mail to the driver that is captured on the camera based upon the last known address of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles in the state of Ohio, which is notoriously inaccurate in providing those addresses. And what you run into is a notice problem and a notice requirement in civil cases in the state of Ohio. In order to get service, you know, there are a number of things you have to do or should do. Those are not done in these cases, and that's why we think it violates due process.
Well, wait a second. You're identifying an issue I wasn't even aware of, and that is that sometimes these are sent to the wrong addresses. Now, that is a huge problem.
Oh, my goodness. It happens very, very frequently, and, you know, I've dealt with the Bureau of Motor Vehicles in one form or the other for the last 35 years in my career, and they are notorious for getting it wrong and not having the last known address. And here's the problem with it, and this is why the judge, I think, ruled in our favor with respect to the injunction. If this thing goes to the wrong address and then becomes a judgment, it could go on the person's credit record, and, you know, it's a $105 ticket, and I understand that's not as much as some things that you could default on, but it could prevent the person from getting a loan, you know, either a mortgage loan, a car loan, and that's a very real possibility and a very real problem.
What is the difference between a notice of liability and a citation? And you said that they were sent to the driver, or are they sent to where the car's registered?
No, they're actually sent to the owner. If I said driver, that's incorrect. It's sent to the registered owner of the vehicle, and that person is then responsible for paying the citation, whether that person was driving or not.
I have to stop you again. How can that be the case? How can I, if I own a car, be responsible for someone else speeding?
Well, here's the thing. If you weren't driving the car, the burden is upon you to demonstrate through affidavits or other means that you weren't the driver. That, I think, is blatantly unconstitutional, and that's one of the problems with the ordinance authorizing this. You have a spousal immunity question. Let's say the husband, the car is titled in the husband's name, the wife is driving, the citation comes to, the notice of liability comes to the husband. Well, then he's basically got a, for lack of a better word, rat on his wife, and that violates the spousal privilege that we have in Ohio, and that's throughout the country. The ordinance authorizing this that the Village of Elmwood enacted is just fraught with problems, and these people just don't get an opportunity to be heard.
Well, again, you're the criminal guy. I mean, but isn't this a criminal situation? I mean, when you get pulled over by an actual cop and you are given a traffic citation, that is a criminal matter. And normally, in a criminal matter, the entire burden rests upon the state.
You're absolutely right about that, Stuart. In Ohio, it's considered a traffic offense, but the rules of evidence apply. Everything applies in a traffic case that would apply in a criminal case. Discovery, although it's rare that you'd have discovery on a speeding violation that a police officer issues, it's possible. Cross-examination of witnesses, the burden of proof being beyond a reasonable doubt. And what these villages and these municipalities are saying, the ones that enact these ordinance authorizing speed cameras, they said, hey, we're not doing this for the money. We're doing it because of public safety, which is laughable. And, you know, my response and others' response to that is, well, then put a police officer on the street where the speeding is taking place. Because I was a municipal court judge for a number of years and a municipal court prosecutor. If someone contests a speeding citation, which doesn't happen that often, but it does, that police officer has to testify under oath that he calibrated his radar unit or laser unit, that it was calibrated before, during, and after his tour of duty. That police officer has to testify under oath that he or she is certain that the person that they pulled over was the person speeding. You don't have that in these speed camera cases, and the protections just are not there for the people that receive the notices of liability.
And is that because this municipality and others who have adopted these cameras are simply relabeling these as civil rather than criminal matters?
You're absolutely right about that, Stuart. That's how they're doing it, and they're cloaking it under the guise of public safety, and it just doesn't fly. This little municipality of Elmwood, as of mid-January, they had generated $1.6 million with these things, and my estimate, by the time they were shut down about 3 weeks ago, they probably exceeded $2 million. And again, I understand that municipalities are hurting, but that's not the way to raise money. And the way it works is that the municipality, in this case Elmwood, receives 60% of that money, and OptiTraffic, who is the vendor, they receive 40% of the money. So there's a lot of money changing hands and a lot of revenue being generated by these things, but they just don't comply with either the Ohio Constitution or the federal Constitution, in my opinion.
Well, tell me about the specific case you had. What was your client doing, and what happened to him, and what were the arguments you made, and what did the court say?
We actually had about 10 plaintiffs, Stuart, that were people that either lived in the village, traveled through the village, owned business there. And we filed in the Court of Common Pleas, which is the mid-level trial court in the state of Ohio, asking for a temporary injunction. And we had the hearing. The judge ended up giving us a permanent injunction. We had witnesses that testified at the hearing. One was a priest that had a very small Catholic Vietnamese congregation within the village, and he testified under oath and testified truthfully that there were a number of people from his church that were afraid to go to church because they didn't want to get these speed tickets, the notices of liability that they really couldn't effectively fight. We had a business owner testify that it was affecting his business. We had ordinary citizens who passed through the village of Elmwood and got these tickets. And the trial judge in our case, Judge Robert Ruhlman, came out with a pretty strong opinion saying that they did violate due process, and he shut it down. He just shut the program down. They went to the Court of Appeals asking for a stay pending appeal. The Court of Appeals a couple Fridays ago came out and said, no, we're not going to grant the stay. The full appeal will go forward. So we expect that that system in the village of Elmwood, as far as speed cameras, will be shut down probably for close to a year.
I'm wondering about refunds.
Well, it's funny you should ask that. We just, like last week, we filed a motion to amend our complaint to provide for the establishment of a class for those that have paid their citations. Judge Ruhlman's ruling did not cover them. That motion is pending before Judge Ruhlman, and we expect that he will permit the class, and we're going to try to get money back for those people that paid that $105.
Now, that's extremely important, because if you're, you know, another municipality, you know, Podunk USA, who is considering adopting this, you don't have much of a disincentive if all you face is a court order to stop. But if you know that you might only not be, you might be ordered to stop, but on top of that, you're going to have to refund everything that you've taken in, perhaps plus statutory interest, or maybe with some penalties, or maybe court expenses on top of it, then the incentives change rather radically, and you're not going to be inclined to install one of those cameras.
You're absolutely right about that, and there are municipalities within the Cincinnati area that are considering it. And I think the experience that Elmwood Place has had, I think, are going to cause them to think twice about it. In addition to that, Stuart, the Ohio legislature is considering, and legislation was just recently introduced by a Democratic sponsor and a Republican sponsor, to shut these things down throughout the state of Ohio. There is a state statute authorizing this, but there has been such an uproar about this that these two state legislators introduced this legislation. I'm told by people who watch the State House in Columbus that there's a very good chance that that will pass.
You were kind enough to share with me, or your law partner was, a copy of the order in this case, and mm-hmm. I seem to recall that the judge's primary concern was one that we discussed at the outset, which is that these notices, if they reach the registered vehicle owner, do not identify who the driver was, and there's no way of doing that. Is that correct? Was that truly sort of the central issue for this judge?
That's absolutely right. What you get is a picture of a vehicle, which is absolutely meaningless. And the representative of OptiTraffic at the hearing pretty much said that it's there, it's a picture of a car, but it doesn't really mean anything. Unlike a red light camera, and I oppose those as well, but at least with a red light camera, the camera does actually take the photograph of the actual violation. In the case of speed cameras, yeah, it's a picture of a car, but you're left to rely upon the vendor saying that, well, it's properly calibrated, and we're sure that the car that we got was your car, and that doesn't cut it, and that's not right, and I think it violates both the Ohio and federal constitutions. You know, my argument, my response to the argument that, hey, this is a public safety issue, put a cop on the street running radar who's licensed, certified, and will testify under oath that the device was calibrated. I understand your argument that it does cost a municipality to do that, but the cost of having that officer there would be offset by the revenue that's generated. These things are just a bad idea. I went to so many of the hearings that this municipality had, and the people that are receiving these notices of liability are low-income people, people on fixed incomes, unemployed people. The village of Elmwood Place in Cincinnati is not an affluent community, and people that pass through it generally are not affluent. The people that are getting these citations are the people that can least afford them. And it's just not right, and I'm very grateful that the judge held in our favor, and I'm hopeful and optimistic that we'll prevail through the Court of Appeals and probably ultimately the Ohio Supreme Court.
Well, Mike, I see an entirely new career path opening ahead of you. I think that this case is probably going to bring you, but it apparently already has brought you, more clients than you've ever had before since you entered private practice.
You're right about that. We certainly have gotten the clients from this. You're right.
Okay, and then you will get them certified, or at least it looks like you will get them certified as a class, and there might be a significant amount of money that's
to be recovered here. And as you and I both know, that's the system we have that would give attorneys like you the incentive to spend all their time and money and effort putting these cases together. And that's when municipalities or other defendants start paying a lot of attention, is when they're not faced with some low-income person who's showing up in court by himself, but by a competent attorney who's representing 100 or 200 or 1,000 or more clients as a class.
I think that's what has to happen, and that's what has to happen throughout the country. Citizens have to rise up, and you have to find attorneys that are willing to take a risk to take these cases on. I'll tell you one thing that I know beyond a reasonable doubt, if you will. The public does not support this type of revenue generation by municipalities. And where this thing has made the ballot, and it has made the ballot in some communities in some states, it's voted down 60-40, 70-30, in one case close to 80% against 24. It's just an idea that, if it ever was a good idea, its time has passed.
As a general rule, and at the risk of making everybody listening to this really angry with me, the first time I encountered this issue was, strangely enough, in a conversation with the fellow who was at that time the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and he's currently our governor, Bob McDonnell.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in 07 or 08, and I happened to run into the governor, and at that time, this issue was just sort of emerging. And my initial response was, well, you know, why are all these people complaining about this? If they really were speeding or if they really were running a red light, they shouldn't complain about that. But I guess my assumption was that there was a lot more protection for due process, and that the rules of evidence had remained the same, and that they were, in other words, doing it right. But what you're telling me is that they've been doing it wrong, and it may not even be possible for them to do it right and to actually uphold the Constitution.
In my opinion, Stuart, it's not possible for them to do it right. And the municipality that we sued did it wrong in every way. There is legislation, a statute that authorizes these things, but as I said before, I think the Ohio legislature is going to rescind that. There are ways to do it, at least to follow the statute, but the municipality that we've dealt with has not done that. And it's just a bad way to raise revenue. It truly is. You know, if government's going to stick their hands in your pockets and pull out $105, they darn well better give you an avenue, a real avenue, a realistic avenue, an effective avenue to contest it. And that's just not happening with these cases.
Okay, Mike, after you've made your millions and all the cases and all the clients that are going to come to you, now you got to run for governor, because I just think you're going to win hands down after you have defeated these people. I think you're right. This is probably the most unpopular political decision I've encountered yet. And though I don't typically try to get into political arguments, obviously there's a constitutional nexus here. But Mike, anything else you want to add?
No, I think that pretty well covers it, Stuart. If you want to keep in touch, I'll keep you posted on how the case
Please
proceeds.
Do, because I guarantee you that our listeners are going to be following with great interest and fervor your progress through the Ohio court system. Where are you online? Where can they follow this case online?
It's www.mkallenlaw.com.
www.mkallenlaw.com, and they can follow your progress against the evil empire of red light and speed cameras.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Michael Allen. We appreciate your time.
Okay, Stuart. Thank you.
And that's our show. Once again, we tried to get a comment from the village of Elmwood Place. They didn't respond, so you only heard one side of the story. But thanks, Mike, anyway. We appreciate hearing about it. Thanks also to Sonia Helm, to Peyton Helm, and to their friends Austin Taylor and TJ Flanagan. Update. Austin is now at Carson Newman College in Tennessee on a film scholarship. Peyton plans to join him in the fall if all goes well, and TJ Flanagan may also be the third member of that triumvirate to go off to Carson Newman. Good luck, gentlemen. Keep up with that film career. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. My name is Stuart Harris. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our distribution engineers are Bob Hoffman and Nick Rosa. And remember, you are a part of the American experiment.